I am not Guy Fieri, nor do I look like Guy Fieri, but he picked some really good spots to eat. My name is Carlos Ortiz. I'm our senior pastor. So good to be with you. If you're watching online, we're so glad that you've joined us. We know many of you are on vacation traveling the world, and so we are glad you've taken the time to join us. And many of you are listening on the podcast, and you may not know this, but we have thousands of people who watch or listen throughout the week who maybe aren't on a Sunday morning. We're so glad that you're taking the time to grow with us today. Have you ever heard of the phrase or the term or philosophy, the butterfly effect? It's this idea, this philosophy, this notion that one small insignificant decision can have both linear and non-linear effects way beyond the decision that was particularly made. And this week, I was able to actually spend a few days in the Caribbean, not on vacation, but with one of our missions partners. Who's making a difference in Haiti and in the Dominican Republic. And it was amazing to see the butterfly effect of so many of your decisions, or maybe us as a church or other people, or the CEO and his family as they stepped out 25 years ago to start Mission of Hope. But I was thinking about this butterfly effect because I remember talking to one of the pastors. And he's in a small town. He leads a church of about 75 people, but he has started several churches and raised up these other pastors. And he was talking about all the efforts that he put over the last 20 years to be a pastor. And now he saw people come to Christ. He saw people grow, but he was limited in a poor country to be able to match the resources required to live life in his particular area of the Dominican Republic. And as he was talking about all the great things that have happened over the last few years, he said, but over the last 6 months, his partnership with Mission of Hope, which is one of our partners here at Gateways Church, has completely revolutionized what he does as a pastor. Because Mission of Hope doesn't come alongside them with their idea of how they should do ministry from a bunch of Americans in their country. They go to those pastors and say, what are the needs and resources needed in your country, and how can we come alongside you? And to see how they're making a difference. And one really cool story was this Haitian church, all these immigrants from Haiti, with all the atrocities happening in Haiti right now, millions have fled as immigrants to the other side of the island known as the Dominican Republic. And they are marginalized there. They have all sorts of immigration issues like we have here. And all these Haitians, poor Haitians, are just trying to survive. And this pastor started a church and just trying to minister to people and lead people to Jesus and provide resources. And his next door neighbor, now, this is not a church like ours in the States. It's a house church that really seats about 40 people. And so right on the other side of the wall is a house. And this person's a Dominican person, and they didn't like the immigrants next door. So she wanted to call immigration, and they didn't do anything about it initially. And 1 week, her house caught on fire. Her part of the house caught on fire and destroyed much of their house. And you know what this Haitian pastor did? He asked Mission of Hope to help them and the Haitians rebuild the house for the Dominican woman who didn't want them there in the first place. Right? And now she's their biggest fan. And now she loves them, right? But all that happened because 25 years ago, a family stepped out to make a difference in another part of the world. All that happened because people like us and you and I, we give or we pack meals and we do all these things. And there's all these effects that happen. And that is truly a biblical way of doing things. And it's so contrary to our culture that you and I by ourselves are going to make a difference in the world. That this individual idea that we can really change the world, it's probably more the butterfly effect than it is you as a person and whatever resources you and I have. Here's the question. Why do we so often feel the need to prove that we can do it and we can accomplish on our own? What is it about maybe the way we were raised, maybe about the culture, about how we are wired, that we feel that we have to do it on our own? We have to be the self-made person. We celebrate the Shark Tanks. We celebrate the inventors. We celebrate all these people as though they are a self-made person in a vacuum with nobody around. And that individual success can be accessible to every single one of us. You know, there's so many self-help books and so many podcasts. And if you just go on Google and just Google self-help books, you'll get 3.1 billion results. That's billion with a B. There's coaching podcasts and webinars and budget planning tools and weight loss programs. All these things that say you can do it in the comfort of your own home. You don't need, cancel your gym membership. Cancel this. All you need is this one resource, and it's grown to a $42 billion industry. Projected to grow to a $60 billion industry in just the next 5 years. Because we've bought into this, and here's the question about that. Is any of it really working? I mean, how many diet resources do you have locked in a closet somewhere from 10 years ago? How many podcasts did you sign up for at only $1.99 a month, but it's been 36 months and you haven't listened to one of them? How many books have you and I ordered? I know I have, and they sit on a shelf and they look really cool and colorful, but then somebody asks you, did you read any of those? And you have to say, no. Because it sounds good, but is it really working? And we know it's not working because pre-pandemic, it said 20% of us, adults and teenagers alike, were struggling with anxiety and depression. Post-pandemic, that number is up 25%. And it's this tension that we live in an era there's so much information and everything is curated for you. Just take 5 minutes and do this survey and we will come up with a diet plan just for you. Just take 10 minutes and fill this out and we'll come up with a financial resource just for you. We will help you get ready for retirement. I made a mistake a few months ago, actually probably 6 months ago. I started looking up resources on some retirement tools. Libby and I were trying to readjust some of our stuff around retirement, and it's really important for us. Well, now everything in my feed is about people your age should be here. You guys are laughing, right? And if you sign up for this, we will help you get there. They don't even know how much I make. They don't even know what my current plan is. They're just trying to get me to sign up with a lot of hope. But here's the truth. The truth is nobody can fully know themselves by themselves. Nobody can fully know themselves by themselves because there's the weight of life and there's the weight of relationships and finances and career aspirations, dreams that you have. And we can try to do it on our own. We can try really hard to do it on our own. When I first got into ministry, I tried really hard to prove myself. I was not a Christ follower. I didn't start following Jesus till I was in college, but I grew up in church and I hated church and I spent years just trying to deconstruct and what I didn't agree with. And my dad was the pastor, you know, like breaking down my dad's messages and like reading the Bible so I can argue with him and reading other books and all these things. So I finally come to know Jesus. And I'm trying to grow in my faith, and I'm doing it by myself, and I'm studying the Bible by myself, and I'm doing all these things. I get called into ministry, so I start doing ministry, and I'm working really hard. My dad stops me one day, and he says, what are you doing? Oh, I'm working for God. Yeah, but you're doing it all by yourself, and this is not sustainable. He's like, what do you mean? I'm a capable person. I can do this. And about 2 years in, I hit the wall. You ever hit the wall? If you're not sure if you hit the wall, you've never hit the wall. How many of you can honestly say online in the room, you know when you've hit the wall? Raise your hand. That moment where you just broke down. Some of us cry in a puddle of tears. Some of us hit the wall and we just escape and we run from everything. Some of us do things we shouldn't do. Some of us drink too much. Some of us do all sorts of things. I hit the wall one day. Let me tell you what I did. I walked into my house and my mom was there and my mom, I love my mom, you know, her and I were really close and she goes, Mijo, I don't think you're okay. I said, I'm fine, mom, I'm fine. No, I don't think you're okay. And she gave me this hug and everything just broke. I'm only 21 years old. trying to strive to grow in God and make a difference. And I had a physiological response to the stress and anxiety and worry of my life. This happened 3 times in my life, and it might sound gross to some of you. It's totally okay. And I didn't know what to do, and my mom just started hugging me and praying over me. And you know what? My body, I didn't mean to do this. I just started just throwing up. And my mom, man, you know a real mom. You think she was fazed by my vomit? She just stayed in it with me. And I'm whoop, whoop, throwing up all over. My dad left the room. I love you, Dad. I know you're watching right now. But you left the room, Dad. Mom stayed in the vomit with me. And then my dad cleaned it up. Yeah, right. Because I thought I could do it by myself, and I had to learn. And to be honest with you, I went through it 2 more times. I didn't learn my lesson probably till my early 30s. Why? Why do we have this idea that if we don't do it on our own, it didn't actually happen? That's not a biblical way of looking at things. And so why do we do things when nobody can really fully know themselves by themselves? Why do we listen to this? And any voice that tells you, book, podcast, pastor, boss, anybody who tells you that you should do it by yourself and can do it by yourself and that you don't need people around you, just push through and make it happen, don't truly understand what it means to be healthy as a person, much less a person who loves Jesus and is following Christ. We aren't meant to live like this, and it's not biblical. I want you to hear me. It is not biblical to live like that. It's not God's design. So we go to the book of Hebrews, and in the book of Hebrews, you hear this great language about the goodness of God and who Jesus is, and yet in the very next breath, there's this challenge to the idea of being self-made. And we're challenged and encouraged. So here we go, Hebrews chapter 10, starting in verse 19. Therefore, brothers and sisters, since we have confidence to enter the most holy place by the blood of Jesus, verse 20, by a new and living way opened for us through the curtain that is his body. I know we're going to get there. Some of this language, you're like, what does this mean? What curtains were we talking about? And since we have a great priest over the house of God, let us draw near to God with a sincere heart and with full assurance that faith brings, having our hearts sprinkled to cleanse us from a guilty conscience and having our bodies washed with pure water. What the heck? Some of you are like, I have no idea. I think I'm in the wrong place right now. I don't know what any of that means. But listen to this language, right? This most holy place. The curtain, the sprinkling, being washed. All this is Old Testament language. So Hebrews is in the New Testament. And there's a lot of theologians who believe that Hebrews is written by certain people, but most agree that we're not 100% certain who wrote it. So the writer of Hebrews, whoever that was, is referring to Old Testament language of the priest going into the holy place. And in the Old Testament, what would happen is a priest was the only one who could go into what's called the Holy of Holies. And there were all these rules and regulations, and they had to give sacrifice, and the general public could not enter into that place because only the priest knew the rituals and the protocols by which to go into the Holy of Holies. And the author here is wanting us to know that in the New Testament, because of the blood of Jesus, because of his work and his sacrifice for you and I, this language that was reserved for a high priest is now language that you and I have access to. You and I get to walk into the most holy place. We get to go behind the curtain that people were normally kept out of. We get to be sprinkled and washed by the blood of Jesus, and we get to walk in this journey having the same access to God. This is what separates, I'm not trying to go on a diatribe here, this is what separates us from our Christian brothers and sisters who are Catholic, who follow the Roman Catholic way. My wife grew up Catholic, and the reason why she left the Catholic Church and joined a Christian church was because she said she, when she read in the Bible, that she had access, that the same access as the high priest, that caused a tension in her heart. She no longer had to go to a priest to go as a conduit between her and God. She no longer had to go to a priest to ask for the forgiveness and remission of sin. She had access to God, her creator. That's what Hebrews is trying to encourage us with. And it's beautiful language, and yet at the same time, verse 23, let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful. God is faithful. Jesus is faithful. And this act, yes, is very individualistic. We cannot come to know Jesus by a group. We cannot come to know Jesus by consensus. You cannot pass down a belief in Jesus from one generation to the next. I want you to hear me. You cannot pass on a belief in Jesus from one generation to the next. You know what we do pass on? We pass on our faith, our belief, our stories of who God is and who Jesus is, but it is up to the next person in your family, the next person in your friendships to believe for themselves. We cannot force belief. Yeah, well, I'm a 10th generation Christian. There's no such thing as a 10th generation son of God. First generations. Have you believed? Have I believed for myself? Verse 24, and let us consider how we may spur one another towards love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing. See that? I think they went through COVID back then. Verse 25, again, not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. Let me reiterate this. Consider how we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds. So here's how we break this down. If holding on to the hope we profess in Jesus is mostly about me, are mostly about who I am as an individual person. If I must believe in the hope of Jesus, then living out that hope is a we thing. Let me say it again. If holding on to the hope we profess in Jesus is mostly a me thing, let me tell you why. You and I have to make individual decisions about how we believe in Jesus. And so if that's a me thing, then living it out and the hope of that is a we thing. And that might sound contradictory to what we're talking about, but the truth is you and I have to make decisions because our hope has to be anchored in who Christ is. Our hope cannot be anchored in a church building or in a philosophy or a denomination of churches or a small group. I love it when people will come to me and say, man, I love Gateway Church. Man, I gave my life to Jesus here. I love Gateway. I love Gateway. But here's the thing. As much as I'm glad you love Gateway, or you came to know Christ under John's leadership, or you're new and you came to Christ under my leadership, doesn't really matter. Doesn't matter. Do you have a hope in Jesus? Is Jesus at the center? And we just get to be a place and a conduit to love you where every life matters. Life by life, it matters, and yet we cannot save your soul. I cannot take you to heaven. I cannot heal you, and yet I can point you to the one who can. His name is Jesus. And so if that part is a me thing, is a you thing, then the living it out is a we thing. That's how it works. So those of you who are Lord of the Ring fans, it's basically Frodo carrying the ring. He's all by himself, but he's got Samwise Gamgee. And he's getting to Mount Doom and he can't do it anymore. And he's on the ground. He can't figure it out. And he just can't go anymore. And you would think, as I'm watching the movie, well, Sam, take the ring and just throw it in the fire already. And it doesn't have to be a 3.5-hour movie. It could have been a 2-hour movie. But I read the books. I know that's not how it works. And what does his best friend Sam say? The one who didn't make the decision but was there to support him. What does he say? I can't carry that ring for you, Mr. Frodo, but I can carry you. I can't carry the ring for you, but I can carry you. And do you and I know that as we stir one another, we can't carry each other's burdens, but we can help carry the person as they carry the burden? Because our hope is in Christ. And the living out that hope becomes about us together. Yes, the truth is we're going to have difficult seasons. And sometimes we have to build what we need before we need it. You have to build out what you need before you need it. I mean, you learned this when you're younger. You're applying for college. You're a junior, a senior in high school. And you're like, oh, I don't have anything to put on my resume when I apply to colleges. So what you see for the average high school student, all these hours of service right before application season. Why didn't you start when you were 12 and 13? I'm so proud of many of our students at Gateway who serve in our kids' ministry, who serve on our tech teams. Already just having a life of service before they need it. Why? Because there are going to be difficult seasons that we face, or that your friends will face, or your children will face. And in those seasons, we have to know that we have built relationships with people. Not for usury's sake, but for the heart of serving one another. And Hebrew gives us these things at the front of our minds. Two things, just to review really quick about Hebrews. If you don't remember any of those passages, two things. One, hold on to Jesus. I mean, some of you may better remember it as Jesus Take the Wheel. Horrible song. Jesus Take the Wheel. Like, okay, at the center of everything is Jesus there. And then number two, look out for each other. Do you just look out for each other? I mean, I don't know about you, but sometimes I do have nosy neighbors. But guess what? Sometimes I need them to be nosy because they catch something. Do you know somebody came and knocked on your door and you weren't here? I did not. But thanks for looking out. What were you doing in front of my house at 2:00 in the morning? I don't know. But thank you. Just look out for each other. It's not really that difficult. We hold on to Jesus and we look out for each other. In the basic underwater demolition SEAL training called BUDS, there's these scenes that many of us have seen in movies or heard about. And there's this idea and this notion that if you and I go in front of a wave on the beach and we try to sit there and just withstand the wave, nobody can actually withstand the wave. Nobody. And actually, you know, stay in place and withstand it. So they do this exercise where they go in front of the wave, and as soon as they sit down, they lock arms with the idea and the hope and the strong belief that together they go from zero chance of withstanding the waves, and together, locked arms, together they can make a difference by withstanding the waves that come, and sometimes they are there for hours. Why? Because they lock arms with one another and then they lay down. Who are you locking arms with? Who's locking arms with you? Because the waves come and we all succumb to the waves, and yet we go from zero chance by ourselves with having an opportunity and a hope and a future of not just surviving but overcoming when we lock arms with people around us. Is this easy? It sounds easy. It looks easy. But have you ever tried it? You ever tried it? Next time you go to the beach, take your 5-year-old and try it with them. It's not easy. It takes a lot of work. Why? Because nobody can fully know themselves and spur themselves on and stir themselves up by themselves. Can't do it. We're not able to do it. So what does this mean for us from this passage in Hebrews? What does this look like for us? There are three questions about these gifts that we have, because every one of you have a gift to do something like this, to make a difference in somebody else's life. What are the three questions that come from this? We're going to go to Romans chapter 12. Before we go to the questions, here we go. Verse 3, for by the grace given me, I say to every one of you, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment. And in accordance with the faith of God has distributed to each of you. For just as each of us has one body with many members, and these members do not all have the same function, so in Christ we, though many, form one body, and each member belongs to all the others. See, if you go back to that SEAL training, you gotta listen and be careful to not think of yourself stronger than you actually are. You ever seen something that looks really difficult, you think you can go do it, and it's actually a lot harder than you thought? Almost impossible. Verse 6 in Romans 12 says this, we have different gifts according to the grace given to each of us. And if your gift is prophesying, then prophesy in accordance with your faith. If it is serving, then serve. If it is teaching, then teach. If it is to encourage, then give encouragement. If it is giving, then give generously. If it is to lead, do it diligently. If it is to show mercy, do it cheerfully. And here's what Paul's saying. However you're gifted, give the gift away. However you're gifted, give the gift away. So here are the questions. Do you know how you've been gifted? Here's the first one. Do you know how you've been gifted? Many of you may not know. There's a lot of you who are brand new. Some of you who are exploring faith. And so we want to create a resource, and we have a resource. And it's going to be on the screen right now, spiritualgifttest.com. We're not going to sell you anything, promise. Just for you to take the time to do that and then discuss that with somebody around you. Do you know how you've been gifted? Number two, who in your life is stirring you up? Who in your life is stirring you up? Do you remember that person who saw that gift in you for the very first time? I was a young pastor. I wasn't even a pastor. I was in ministry, but I wasn't a pastor. I was just on the staff at a church, and this guy named Scott Fuller. Wasn't my mentor? Nothing. He just saw that I was 20 years old, and I wasn't making any money, and I was just trying to serve and grow in Jesus, and he's like, hey, you have an eye for business. And I know God's called you to be a pastor, but until then, will you want to help me run the church business office? So I was 20 years old, and they put me in charge of a $1.5 million budget. I'm 20. I don't even have my own checking account, basically. But he saw a gift in me, and then I grew to run the whole church business office by the time I was 21. And then I ran all of our camps, and our camps always ended up in the black, and I just, God had given me a knack to handle money really well and steward it really well. He saw the eye for talent. And I know it's a phrase we use in our work job, in our workplace, but do you have an eye for talent? Do you have an eye to see the gift in somebody everywhere you go, or do you only reserve that talent for when you're at work? Do you have an eye to see the gift in somebody? Again, we were in the Dominican Republic this week, and we saw this young lady. She's probably 26 years old, very gifted. And I was looking at our executive pastor, Charles, and I'm like, you know what? We're going to bring that young lady to come speak at Gateway. I know she's 26. I know she probably doesn't speak at many churches, but she has a gift in her, and we want to fan that flame. And I want our church to support her and care for her and give her an opportunity to share her heart for her island. So we're going to bring her out one day. I don't know when. But you know what? We're in the middle of Dominican Republic. I don't even know if she knows how to do this, but there was something in her that our team saw, and we said, yes, our church would love to hear from this young lady. We can all do this, to see the gift of God in people. Do you know you and I are impacted by this? Our associate campus pastor, Ross, you see on stage all the time, he's here today. You know, he's an engineer by trade. Just like our founding pastor, John Burke, he was an engineer, and somebody in his walk of faith came alongside him and said, hey, do you know you might be called to do this? And here we are 5.5 years later, and he's helped me lead our North Campus. Why? Because somebody took the time to look at him, an engineer doing really well for himself here in the Austin area, and said, gosh, there's something deeper in you. It wasn't a pastor. It wasn't the senior pastor saying, oh, you should be a pastor. It's just people in his life saying, you might be called to do this. You and I have that kind of influence in people's lives. Sometimes it's an irritation, the irritation challenge, to look at somebody and challenge them to make them better. But that's what we do. And it leads to number three. In what ways are you stirring others up? If we need people to stir us up, in what ways are you and I, again, having that eye for talent to stir others up? We're going to have a full circle moment here. A few weeks ago, I received this card from somebody in our church, and you'll see who they are here in a second. And it was a thank you card. We shared the story of one of our worship leaders, Nikki. She shared her story. Come on, Nikki. And give it up for Nikki. We love it when she leads us. And this is totally unplanned. It was this morning I was praying, and I was like, I really feel we should, because Nikki, you shared your story about losing your job a few months ago. In the middle of that, you had surgery and all sorts of things. And you were just leading our church through being faithful in the middle of difficult circumstances. And so I asked Nikki if she would just share a private moment. She said yes, in these thank you cards to some people who made a difference, who stirred up something in you. And I just wanted you to share with us kind of what you wrote for those people.
Yeah. So it was basically just a heartfelt thank you for stepping up and being there for myself and my family, and not really knowing who these people are, still had, you know, that heart to serve and to be kind and loving and obeying the Spirit, saying, you know, like, we want to help. And in that moment, it made me realize that I'm not alone. Like, God hears prayers too, but also it did stir up in me that wanting to give back, even though I still don't have much to give, but I have that heart to give back to others, whether it's through prayer or talents or, you know, anything that I have, I want to give back.
So in their serving and come alongside you and your daughters as a single mom, something was stirred in you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's like that, you know, thing where you go to Starbucks and someone pays for your coffee, you want to pay it forward and pay for the next person, you know, behind you. And it kind of goes on and on, like that positive ripple effect. And that's what I want to do.
Yeah. And so I'm so grateful. You made a comment earlier to me, like, you grew up in church, but you've never felt as loved in the local church, right?
Absolutely. I never experienced anything like this in my entire 44, almost 45 years.
So we're so glad people served you. But I got to tell you something. For those of you who did come alongside or wrote notes of encouragement or did what you did, thank you. But can I tell you something? We don't do what we do because we're good people. We don't do what we do because we're just generous people. We do what we do because the gift of God is in us. We do what we do because Romans says that whatever gift you have, whatever talent you have, let it be so stirred in you that it pours out into others, and it stirs out and it stirs somebody else to make a difference. All that happened with Nikki in this story right now is because of the gift of God in others. And then she gets to stir up others. And we do this because God is good. Because God loved us before we could ever love him. Because he sent his son Jesus to die for you and I. And so if we're challenged to do two things, hold on to Jesus and look out for one another, we got to go with the first one first. Hold on to Jesus. And I know walking in Jesus is a private matter, but it's really not so private. There's a public face of that. Next month, we're going to have times of baptism. And I've done this before at other places. Some of us believe in Jesus in a very private way. And God might be asking you to take that private belief and go public with it. And maybe this is the first time you'd ever be water baptized. And you're going to hear more about it in the weeks to come. Because we believe in Jesus. And the reason why we go public, because in that public, we go from me to we. We get to celebrate you. We get to do it together. But it starts with the goodness of God. It starts a belief in who Jesus is. So I'm asking Nikki to kind of lead us You guys stay seated where you are. Ask them just to kind of lead us in a chorus and sing it with them if you can. And if you don't want to sing it, that's fine. Just listen to it. It's coming from the bottom of their heart. But the goodness and the greatness of God. Thanks, Nikki.